Okay, we're going to start our regular board supervisors meeting. Chaplain, if you give us either an invocation or a pledge of allegiance, you pick which one you're going to start and you vote.
To the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And let's pray together. Father, what a pleasure to be here this morning just to be part of government and work. We are grateful for the firefighters and all of the first responders and all of those providing the backup situations. They worked hard during this fire time. And God, we thank you for the progress that has been made and for their many efforts. For the business of the day, we pray for good discussion. We pray for thoughtful decisions. Father, we pray that it would move forward everything that we do in our county. And we give you thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
So the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District in County Service Area 3 and receives no additional compensation. Roll call, Supervisor.
Present.
Supervisor Cobsett.
Here.
Excuse me, Supervisor Chris.
Present.
Supervisor Ogren.
Present.
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to item 4, presentations from the public. Time slots for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be made to limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Anything online?
None online.
Okay, nothing in-house, Mr. Pagoni. Yours is an item. I'll wait for that item to come up. Is that okay?
Sure.
You're ready. You have public comments. So no. You want to wait to the items, please?
Yep.
Okay. We're going to move on to item 5, consent agenda. Item J is going to be pulled. Anything from the board?
K and U.
BB.
Which ones?
K and Q, BB.
BB.
Anyone else?
Also move for the remaining ballots.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobsett.
Aye.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes, item K.
First,
sure.
On page 2 of the policies, item 2.0, general service authorities, it says at the bottom, Lake Shestina Public Campground. I know years ago we made that a day use campground, and I'd like to see that language there versus just campground so we don't have to go back and rehash that. I don't know if that can occur today or how you want to do that.
Go ahead.
And then on page 4, item 4.5, where it talks about tobacco and alcohol, it describes a county alcohol permit, and I think what you're after is an
ABC
license, that they have to meet that requirement,
correct? Yeah.
We don't want to be doing that,
no.
Right? Thank you. That's it for me.
So I wanted to address 2.0. The wording that is in there comes straight out of the ordinance, so we'd have to change the ordinance in order to have it. But I did look up the Lake Shestina, and it does say use of campgrounds at Lake Shestina shall be limited to day use. Overnight camping is prohibited. So I don't know if that, because it is used as a campground in there,
yeah.
I don't know if that
covers
it. I'm not, I don't know.
Well, I don't want to create opening a can of worms to recreate a whole ordinance, but it's on the position, though, I think. Is that correct? It's not on the
yes. Yeah.
The campground itself.
What about if we added that to it? at the bottom of it, where it does say that, you know, like under D, it is the deputy or the director's position or duties, but then maybe underneath it also add the use of campground at Lake Shasta and it shall be limited to day use.
That'd be perfect.
Then it just incorporates
it
all.
That's perfect. Yep, thank you. Just don't want to go back to the old way.
Yes, me either.
Can we make a motion on that?
So do you have any changes you want in it as well, or everything else is good?
Everything else was pretty
okay.
good.
So does it have to come back?
Natalie Reed, County Council, you could amend on the record if you're certain of the language and it's clear what language you are amending, or it can be brought back as draft.
What's easier for you?
I could certainly amend the language to add to item 2.0 that the campground at Lake Shasta is limited to day use, and then on section 4.5 to clarify or correct that an alcohol permit would be through an ABC license, and so if we can move forward
with the board approving this item
with
those amendments. Okay, so moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, let's see. Supervisor Hupp?
Aye.
Supervisor Cox?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. I was just curious. I didn't get a reply. I think Sarah's out of town. So how many rooms on each contract? It didn't describe that in the material.
So the first contract, the budget and the house. Oops. Oh, sorry. My name is Tracy Lima. I'm the clinical director for Behavioral Health. Sorry about that. I don't come here often enough. The first budget and house right next to the motel, that has, I believe it has four bedrooms, and the new house that this owner purchased, which is down the road right next to the wellness center, that has six rooms, has a potential for laundry facilities on site, shared cooking and space.
So these are more, I'll call it a housing unit versus like a motel room?
They are absolutely a housing unit. They're both houses that are designed for shared housing. So each person will rent their own room at a reduced rate, and Mental Health Service Act will augment any amount that the consumer cannot cover. So it enables them to have a step up from motel housing. So
right.
Somebody going from housing insecure to motel to this next level, which they then will build renters kind of credit and their own credit, because
mm-hmm.
they have a lease directly with the landlord. And so that gives them the opportunity to be able to pay rent to some degree towards their own housing.
And are we paying up what I'll call market rate or above? Roughly what would one room be, I guess, monthly? Because it's basically 100% occupancy year-round. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And so each of the rooms, they range, that's new house anyways, they range from $500 to $650 per room, depending on the size of the room. And I don't believe you can find any rentals in this county that are about that price. Motel housing for a month is upwards of $2,500 for a month,
okay.
whereas this is a much more affordable cost.
And lastly, sorry, I'm good. Thank you. Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Hupp?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure. Item BB?
Yeah.
Who's going to take this?
I guess I will. I'll do my best.
You should come more often.
Yeah. Or not. We'll see. I came prepared with behavioral health. Let's see how I can help.
Well, I was, I don't know where I've been. This program's been around for a while. I dug into the HARMS website at the state level, and it seems that, at least at the state level, there's a significant emphasis on needle exchange in this program. And I'm wondering to what extent these monies are used in Siskiyou County for a program like that.
I am so sorry. I am not going to be able to answer how the monies are used for that. It might be best to answer by the person that's created the budget so they could clearly answer that. I don't want to guess. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
We can see if we can use
online.
I don't see anybody from,
I don't see anybody.
More simply, do we have that program in Siskiyou County?
We,
as part of it.
We do have a needle exchange in Siskiyou County, and that's on the mobile unit that we have that public health puts out. That's not the only thing that they do. It is a portion of what they do in the community.
I understand.
Yes.
But you don't know how much money we spend on that.
I don't know how much is allocated specifically for that. I do know that Mental Health Service Act actually helps support about $20,000 worth of the mobile unit. I don't know how much the whole mobile unit costs and how much is expended on that, but I do know that for outreach in the county that MHSA, like I said, puts in about $20,000, and that's for access and linkage to all services, drug and alcohol services, which would go along with your needle exchange, mental health services, those types of things. But I don't know the percentage.
Through the chair, Angela Davis, County Administrator, we do have Brenda Harris on the line. I asked her to raise her hand.
Brenda, could you please go ahead and raise your hand?
There she is.
That's perfect. You should be able to unmute now, Brenda. Go ahead.
Good morning, this is Brenda Harris. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I couldn't be there in person today. So the question that I heard was, how much money is being allocated for the actual needle exchange? Is that what the question was?
Correct.
So the CHERI grant is for the needle exchange. It's not for the needle exchange. That money is not used for the needle exchange. The funding will be used for items for the homeless, for winter kits, soap, shampoo, toothbrushes, socks, things that were the homeless need. It is not for the need.
Okay. I think that answers my question. In light of the dismal failure of those programs statewide, I just don't can't support needle exchange. But I'll, if this is not going toward those types of programs, then I'll go ahead and move to approve.
Second.
Okay, Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopstedt?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure. Okay, we move on to
We had one more pulled, item K.
We did that one.
Did we do that one?
We did that, yeah.
We did that.
We did that.
Then what was J?
I don't know. That's what
we didn't pull J.
We actually removed from the agenda.
Yes, I'm going to do that now.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to also go ahead and get up there. We also are pulling item 8. Which one is it now?
To be on the flood control district.
Which item is it?
5-1.
Okay,
B-1.
Did I see B-1? Okay, we're going to be pulling item B-1 also on there. So we'll do all that together. Start with J. Can we do them concurrently?
Okay,
I guess we'll do them consecutively.
Start with J.
Okay, good morning, Matt Parker, Natural Resources. I have a small minor amendment to the license agreement between the County of Siskiyou and DWR regarding a monitoring well in Deep Valley Airport. Page 7, item 12, under notices,
If two licensors, Ed Valenzuela, chair, should be removed or replaced with county administration. And if two cooperator, Ed Valenzuela, chair, should be removed and replaced with GSA plan manager.
So it's just a question?
Yeah.
And for the emails as well, the
yes.
email address will reflect Angela Davis' email, and the email address for cooperator will be county managers.
That's it.
Move
to approve.
So that's item J, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Cofsett?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes. We're going to convene as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Is there any public comment?
None online.
Let's do the consent agenda except for one. We're going to do that here in a moment.
And notation, Allie Reed, County Council. This is the same item that Ms. Nielsen previously amended, the other item on the consent agenda.
B1. I'm going to do that after I do
okay.
the.
Okay. So we move to approve all but B1, right?
Yes. Yep.
No, wait, she's shaking her head.
B2.
No.
Two.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said accept B1.
Accept B1.
So B2 is the one that Ms. Nielsen previously amended.
Okay. So accept B2.
So you're going to have to go individually.
Let's go with B1.
Who was the second? I missed the second.
Don't worry about it. We're starting over.
Okay.
We're starting fresh here.
Okay.
We went through public comment. We're doing the consent. B1, Matt.
All right. Matt Parker, Natural Resources again. Page 7, item 12 under notices. If two licensor, Ed Valenzuela, chair, and the email address should be removed and change to county administration, and if to cooperator and Valenzuela chair, an email should be removed and changed to GSA plan manager in my email.
Move to approve as with the amendments.
Second.
Okay. Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Cofsett?
Aye.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela?
Of course. B2.
Good morning. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. For this item on page 2 of the policy, section 2.0, we will be adding language that notates that the Lake Shastina campground is limited to day use only. And then on page 4 under section 4.5, it will be corrected that any alcohol permits will be sought through an ABC license. Thank you.
Move to approve as amended.
Second.
Okay. Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Cofsett?
Aye.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela?
Yes. Minute approval, item C. Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Cofsett?
Aye.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Valenzuela?
Yes. Okay, we're going to convene back as the Board of Supervisors. We're going to go on to item 6, public requests. Siskiyou County Fish and Game Commission, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Good morning. My name is Steve Fragoni, Siskiyou County Fish and Game Commission, District 2. Thank you for having us this morning. After meeting with Laura Klamath, Tooby Lake Refuge staff on June 27th, and listening to the seriousness of the issues facing the refuges, as an advisory board to the supervisors, a letter stating the facts and issues of our nation's first wildlife refuge was in order. You should have received a letter from us, and I hope all of you looked that over. I can certainly answer questions on that letter. We do have John Dradenberg with us. He's the supervisor biologist for 6 refuges in Southern Oregon and Northern California. I'd kind of like to give him some time, so I'd like to pass this on to him unless there is questions.
Come on up.
Morning, thank you for having me. I do have a presentation if you'd like to see it. It's about a 10-minute presentation just on the challenges we're dealing with.
Sure.
I can
state your name for the record real quick.
John Greenberg, supervisor biologist.
How do you spell the last name?
V as in Victor.
Uh-huh.
R-A-D-E-N-B-U-R-G.
Thank you.
It's the best way to do that.
Thank you. there any hard copies of this presentation printed out?
I do not. I can provide that to you if you'd like.
I'll need it, yes.
Yes, please do.
Well, thank you again. Like I said, my name is John Brainberg. I'm the supervisory biologist for the Klamath Basin Refuge Complex. Like Steve said, Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge is the first refuge established back in 1908 for the specific purpose of waterfowl management. It was the first of its kind. It was the largest at the time, set up by President Roosevelt to maintain this habitat in the Klamath Basin in perpetuity. And I can talk about the challenges that the birds are facing, everybody's facing, but I think more importantly, what I wanted to talk about was how important these wetlands are to all of us in the Klamath Basin from a perspective of water security. As we're facing the challenges of climate change, we have to be thinking about how do we secure water for our future. And the wetlands in the Klamath Basin are set up to do that. So what we're talking about is this idea of ecological resiliency. And ecological resiliency is really the amount of disturbance that an ecosystem can take before it starts changing processes and structures or the return time to a stable state. And more simply, what we're saying when we say ecological resilience is that how much disturbance can a system take before it starts to collapse. And when we look at the historical Klamath Basin, we had this system that was exceptionally ecologically resilient. And now we have this system where the modern Klamath Basin is not, because we've lost our wetland systems. Okay. And this idea of ecological resilience exists at multiple temporal and spatial scales. And so, like I said, historically we had this abundance of wetlands. These wetlands were overlaid on organic soils, and we relied on the Klamath Basin to support migratory networks of fish and birds, to support our agricultural economy, because of the wetlands' ability to provide nutrient-rich soils, to store and transmit water, to provide drinking water for us. And it was these connections between groundwater, surface water, and the wetlands that supported water quality. And so the wetlands really buffered us in drought, and they increased our resiliency, our ability to exist on this landscape, because of the vast amount of water they stored. And when we look at the historic Klamath Basin, we had a system that had over 300,000 acres of perennial wetland systems, about 140,000 acres of seasonal wetland systems, which were our riparian areas. And it's believed that this abundance of wetlands created this microclimate in the Klamath Basin that helped moderate temperature and precipitation. But importantly, it was wetlands and water that defined the Klamath Basin. It was a really wet place. And we have this system, and I say this not loosely, this is a globally unique wetland system. There's nowhere else in the world that functions like the Klamath Basin. It's a backwards watershed, because all of our wetlands are at the top of the watershed, and it goes down into a very narrow river that goes directly out to the ocean. And we had these two distinct systems, an open system with the Klamath River and a closed basin system with the Lost River system. We had these massive wetlands that stored water, and that water transmitted through the soil and moved through the river system really slowly. And that made us resilient. Okay. And this is how they worked. So it's going to take a couple clicks here. So you get these inputs of precipitation, whether it was snowmelt, rain, and the basins would start to fill. Okay. That filling saturated the below-ground basin. That below-ground basin would fill up. And then it would get too wet to where it was overflowing. This is how the Klamath Basin functioned all the time. It was super saturated, so there was always water coming out of the system. Okay. This natural functioning system captured and absorbed flood water, stored that water, attenuated the stream flows. What we mean by attenuation is we drew them out over a long period of time. And because these basins were so big, the Klamath Basin was able to persist over very frequent drought systems, but still stay relatively wet. So that created this ecological resiliency.
Okay.
So it's important to recognize that wetlands are the linchpin of this upper climate basin ecosystem. They support species persistence, reliability of the watershed, enhancement and maintenance of water quality and water supply throughout the basin. But wetlands are not integrated into the recovery of the climate basin, either the species or the ecosystem that evolved with these processes. And we're in the situation now where we have the dams in the Klamath River coming out, and we have to start to recognize that with these dams out, we need these processes in place that are going to support our water security in the Klamath Basin. And it was these wetlands that supported the species, they supported the water, they supported us on the landscape. But these wetlands have limitations, and this is the challenge we're getting into. We have dramatically increased the withdrawals in our water supply. We've drained or curtailed water deliveries to our wetlands, and we've kept more water in the lake and in the river. And this has constrained or temporarily eliminated our ecological resiliency. And this is creating the spiraling decay of water quality problems, water shortages, and it's causing impacts to both fish, wildlife, and people. So in this Klamath Basin of today, we have this situation. The ability of the system to provide resiliency has been decimated. The vast majority of wetland habitat is now agriculture, which is not a bad thing. Agriculture habitat provides energetic resources for birds, but they can't store and transmit water the same way. And the resources for fish and wildlife are insufficient to support the diversity and abundance that we had less than 20 years ago. And so we have this system now where we manage water as it's put and take, and we've all been dealing with this, watching how the river goes up and down. We're waiting for the lakes to fill, but it's just not meeting our needs. And this is leading to further and further decay in the system. And this is impacting natural resources and people up and down the watershed. So we have this water management paradigm where we're managing water mathematically instead of ecologically. So we're decreasing our resiliency where we could be promoting resiliency. And a lot of times climate change is blamed for what's happening here in the Klamath Basin. And yes, we are experiencing these dramatic changes in climatic variability. But we have to recognize that the bigger issue is how to manage water through policy, law, and decision making. And so we have the situation where these policies are causing these changes, but climate change is exacerbating the issues. So we have to recognize that we have the situation where policy can fix some water issues, and that's going to support our resiliency and increase our ability to be more adaptive to climate change. So we really need a paradigm shift. Maybe a couple of clicks here. This is not a fish, water, bird, ag problem or anything. It's an issue related to system decay. And we must recognize that every aspect of the system is being impacted by this. And we can't continue to focus on these individual problems and challenges. We have to focus on restoring an integrated ecosystem. And so I like to think that we've dealt with these 4 or 5 years of dramatic drought. We've also dealt with a year of really wet year. And those two things should be telling us that we're not resilient. We're still dealing with our wetland systems are completely dry. And so something's broken in the system because the climate we're living in today is not resilient. And so in closing, looking forward, we've modified the hydrology of the Klamath Basin at the expense of our wetland systems. The drought's telling us this new ecological state is not resilient. And as we see this future, when the dams are coming out, we have to recognize that we have to rely on the systems that were in place in the upper basin to be that source of resiliency, that water security for us in the future. So in summary, the significance that wetlands play is clear. The loss of ecological resilience is directly linked to the loss of our wetland systems. The recovery of fish, wildlife, water supplies, and water quality hinges on restoring that resiliency. And if we do not restore that ecological resiliency, we're going to continue to have these types of meetings long into the future. But every time we have these meetings, we're going to be talking about less water, a further degraded system, and what we're going to do with this changing system where we have no water to support what we need it to do. And so to me, the math is really simple. A Klamath Basin with wetland systems is a wet Klamath Basin. A wet Klamath Basin is an ecologically resilient Klamath Basin. And an ecologically resilient Klamath Basin is one that can drive the recovery of fish, wildlife, and our communities. So thank you for your time and interest, and I can take any questions. Like I said, I could talk about the numbers that we're seeing happening to the bird populations. They're dramatic. But I think the bigger thing is we have to look at a future that props us all up. I want the wetlands wet because I like birds. But there's a lot of people that want the wetlands wet because we need water security in the Klamath Basin. We have to look at new, novel approaches. And the reason that I'm presenting for Siskiyou County Game Commission is we've seen our wetlands decimated. We're at 1% of the wetland habitat on our refuges right now. We were less than 1% of the bird population that we had 4 years ago in the last surveys. Last year, we had no birds migrated to the refuge. That's an impact to us as federal employees trying to manage these refuges. It's also an impact to you because this is a huge economic plus in the basin. Like I said, this is the first national wildlife refuge. It's in New York County. It's like Yellowstone. If the people next to Yellowstone lost Yellowstone, that economic impact would be huge. And it's the same thing. We have not told that story very well for this county, that we have the nation's first waterfowl refuge. It's a huge gift to the county to have that in your backyard. So thank you for your time, and if you do have any questions, I can help that.
Okay, we'll start off with Supervisor Chris, your district. Any questions?
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation. Thanks for the Fish and Game bringing this forward to us. Now, you know, some of the stuff that's in regards to this, I know one of the aspects, of course, is single species management for the sucker fish habitat. 23 years ago, before 2001, the lake levels did not have to be as high for sucker fish habitat. The last successful recruitment of young sucker fish was in, I think, 91 or 92, when the lake level was 4137.7. And now the federal government, not your agency, I respect that, says it has to be 4139.2, which is feet above what it needs to be. And then the species management, of course, 92 was a low flow year down the Klamath, and it was a high return of salmon between the years migrating afterwards. The single species management, of course, is one aspect, is an illness. It was frustrating for my constituents in Tule, and just speaking generally here, and for the refuges, that they can understand if they were being denied their water and were saving a fish species, but it's hard to understand why they should be denied water when it's not benefiting the fish species at all. I know that must be a frustration for your department along those lines. I know in the upper basin, they used to flood irrigate quite a bit, and that water would saturate out and then slowly percolate down into the Klamath. Now with the flows have to be streamed just through the river, losing most lake flows from irrigation as well. For Clear Lake, sometimes I jump around.
That's fine.
No, for Clear Lake, a Lost River Basin, of course, was a closed basin, and Clear Lake flowed right into to the lake. And, and Clear Lake was designed to evaporate water when they were trying to drain to a lake for refuge growth, well, not for refuge, but for agriculture. And the Clear Lake works beautifully. It evaporates, I think, 60,000 acre feet a year.
Yeah.
It does its job beautifully. And I know one thing that the county's been supporting with the Tri-Counties, which Nielsen we talk about later, and with the Klamath Water Users, Moss Driscoll there, is to try to capture that water that would have evaporated in Clear Lake and then put that down towards the Two Lake Basin and have that water not be lost, without taking water away from Lanchel Valley, because they won't. So it's kind of be a win-win to capture that water that would have evaporated anyways, and then have that water end up in Tule Lake or for the farm ground. But I appreciate what you guys are doing. You guys are your head's caught between the vines. You have a single species, so you got interest for birds, you have interest for ag. I think there are paths forward. We're capturing that water that would have evaporated, whether it be by the one subject's been Boundary Dam, which is historic. It might evaporate as quickly, but there's also underground water and those sorts of things that's being worked on. But Durango, my colleague here, she really pushed forward for the Juniper Tree project with the North Coast Resource Partnership and trying to clear that juniper tree around Clear Lake so we can get some more water there. I think about 30,000 acres have been cleared right now, but there's more that we can do to capture that water. And it's frustrating because we all see paths forward, but then we get caught every year trying to survive.
Right.
The agriculture, the refuse, every year gets caught surviving, and then Peter to pay Paul, we're going to take water from here to here. The irrigators adjust real well, and then I think you're seawater, aren't you, on the refuge?
We are not classified under the project.
Not even classified, okay. But I know that it goes through agriculture first before it even reaches the refuge.
Yeah.
And if everybody's trying to survive, you know, it knocks it out. I have a dear heart for it. I actually grew up just south of the north of the refuge. I fixed the fence there many times to control it. But I know this past forum, working with you, we met with Mr. Austin, I'm your boss, Paul Susan is important. I think we've been surviving every year, and it's hard to, and then we've been trying to solve the whole thing at once. When the kind of water users group are trying to solve, we have to solve partially as well.
Right.
Just comments from Mike.
I would say the way we need to look at the refuges is there's an opportunity. The refuges are the one place in the climate project that we can do everything. We can store water. We can be a source of growing suckers out to help recover the population. We're federally required to have agriculture, so we have a way to show a path forward of sustainable agriculture for the future of the climate basin. And so we can do it all. And we should be that test example. We were at one point. We were held at a national scale as the way sustainable ag works. We had the walking wetland program, we had the organic ag production, we had everything. What we missed was showing where we could be additive to species recovery, because we don't have endangered species on the refuge, but we could provide that habitat that grows fish to help that stopgap to recover the suckers. If we can help recover suckers, we take the pressure off of all of us related to the water issues. And so we should be looking at the refuges as that area that we're using. We're close to extinction on one of those species. And so if we can recover that species, we can show a path forward. We can use the agricultural community to build that nexus of water. I think that's a win-win for everybody. And it shows how we as a community are working together to solve this problem versus being polarized. Because that's how we are right now. We're very polarized because everybody's in their corner fighting for their piece of the water pie right now, and I think there's a great opportunity to bring everybody together. But like I mentioned, we are not part of the climate project. We're not considered part of the purpose of the climate project. So the water rights that we have become junior to the climate project because it was established here before the refuge was established. And so there's no really clear pathway for us to get that water security we need to start that process forward of growing those suckers out, to get the water security for Tule Lake and the irrigators on KDD. And we need to be looking at those. We need to really be thinking outside of the box, because like I said, the wetter the refuges are, the wetter the project is. The wetter the refuges are, the more water we're delivering to the river by the coarse grain soils that are directly connected to the river. And so we need to be looking at new ways, because if we don't think about getting resiliency in the system, our water supplies are going to go down. We're seeing that. After 4 years of drought, we're seeing the groundwater decline. We're seeing the organic soils are drying. We're seeing our towns influenced by all of the dust that's flowing out of those dry lake beds. And so there are ways to do this if we can just get creative and think about it together. I guess my challenge is we shouldn't be seen as antagonistic to the ag community. We're very pro-ag. We're pro-everybody because we benefit. And we work really well with everybody. So I would love a meeting where we could all get together and look at those creative approaches, because we got to solve the species problem. We got to solve the water security problem, or we're all in trouble.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and stop here.
Thank you. Supervisor Ogden? Supervisor Powell?
I got a couple questions for you. In 1908, when the refuge was established, since it was established for wetlands and for birds, there was no mention in because I don't know the, I haven't seen the executive order, I haven't read the establishment. There was no recognition of the need for water.
No, there was not, yeah. When we think back to 1908 and the conditions that existed in 1908, Lower Klamath was still an 80,000 acre lake when the refuge was established. Unfortunately, before the refuge was established, both Oregon and California had ceded the land underneath the lake bed for homesteading. And so when the railroad was established and the lake started to dry out, those lands began to get homesteaded per the federal laws that were in place. There was never any water rights established for the refuge in that early phase. There was at a later date, but that's why I say we're junior to the project, because of the project was established in 1906. We were established in 1908, and that ceding of the lands underneath the lake bed sort of mixed some of those. We do have water rights, but they are junior to the Klamath project right now.
Was that established under executive order, and was it followed up with congressional act? Or how?
Yes, it was established with an executive. We are an executive order established, and there were congressional acts. So we have multiple congressional acts that dictate how the refuges should be managed. Specifically, the one that's important to Lower Klamath and Tule Lake is the Kegel Act of 1964, which is the one that, that was to help moderate the issues of homesteading and the continued drying of the lake and make sure that there was still some of the habitat that the refuge was established for was there. But it established that a certain percentage of the land would be in agricultural production. We have to meet proper waterfowl management first before we can look at agricultural production. That's in the Kegel Act. But then through that Kegel Act, then those, the goal was to make sure that as the refuge, the farming would happen and the monies that would go to the two counties, Siskiyou and Modoc County, would be administered by the Bureau of Reclamation. So the counties do get money from our agricultural program.
Yeah, I know that. What's this administration in Washington doing about the issues up there with the refuge? Because all I see is pandering and not much action to resolve issues.
What does it mean what the county can do?
What's the emphasis of this current administration in D.C. to resolve these issues that you're addressing?
I think right now, I can't speak for the administration.
You certainly get edicts from there.
I mean, the biggest concern for the Fish and Wildlife Service is always going to be endangered species. That's the priority for the endangered species. And then the other congressional mandates, sit below those. And when we're looking at the species concerns that we have right now, specifically with the two sucker species, we have one that's years out from extinction. We're dealing with the last adult cohort, and they haven't successfully recruited for a long time. We have a second species that's a little bit further behind than that, but we're looking at ultimate extinction of those species, and that's the big driver right now. Until we see a positive trend moving forward that those species are going to recover, the water resources are always going to be challenging, and that's why, from the refuge's perspective, we want to be seen as an opportunity to help grow those fish. The fish take 7 years to get reproductively viable. And so looking at the reality of trying to find that an opportunity with a population that's going extinct based on what the success we've seen in the Upper Lake, it's a dire situation. So we have to look at new creative ways to at least get those fish that are in the hatchery now to a survivable state that they can go into the lake. And that's where we see the opportunity to get around some of the issues you're talking about and put the refuges in an appropriate light based on the priorities of recovery. As we get the priorities of recovery off, then we can start doing more creative things for the other needs that are out there.
And then just one more thing. I know a great deal about the Endangered Species Act, and my biggest complaint most of the time is that it elevates one species above its ecological function. And it also separates it and treats it different than another species that may be listed in the same system. So maybe going forward, what I see in the fallacy in all these biological opinions that I see going on up there is they fail to recognize the one limiting factor for all the species, and that's water. Why isn't the biological opinion addressing water to deal with the man-made issues that are creating the problem rather than focusing on individual species and tweaking this and tweaking that and putting everything in peril? I would appreciate your agency putting some focus on that and restoring ecological function rather than looking at these little individual tweaks that aren't getting us anywhere.
Yes, I agree. And that's a concern we hear across the board. And I do feel like there's great efforts happening through, you know, the new biological opinion is in its early phases of initiation right now. And ecological function does seem to be a bigger driver in the conservation now. Or in the conversations, we're hearing that across all invested parties. I go to the meetings and everybody's saying we need to get ecological function back. We need to have that woven into the language to make sure ecological function is the pathway to recovery. You can't focus on species biology to recover the species. And that does seem to be a greater recognition in the conversations now. How that will manifest is uncertain. We're early in that process, but I do feel confident that conversation is changing.
Well, I hope so. I'll finish with just my opinion is that after dams out, if we continue down this path with the COVO and trying to manage water on the Klamath Basin out of Upper Lake, we're going to fail. The only key to success there is getting these wetlands functional again.
Thank you.
So is there a concept?
Without trying to put you on the spot, what's the relationship between your agency and DOR?
I mean, we're within the, you know, we're all Department of Interior.
Right.
So yeah, we're kind of brother and sister agencies. It can be challenging. I mean, we have different purposes. The refuges are for Wildlife First and the Bureau is for water management. And so that can be a challenging relationship, but I feel like we're trying. We're doing what we can to make it work for everybody.
Is it fair to say, though, historically the system was designed to work and it did function?
Yes.
Until, you know, I like the, I'm going to miss your direct quote, but when you talk about, you know, we're doing everything by math now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but it isn't. It isn't working. It's exasperating a system that worked, and yet you're part of the new facilitated meetings. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is this presentation public for public view?
I don't know if it's fully public. I've given it at numerous public events.
Yeah.
But we do have to go through Washington level approval.
Has BOR seen it?
Yes. Yeah, BOR.
What's their thoughts on it, if I'm not putting it in an awkward spot?
I think everybody agrees. I think, the basic idea of that we need resiliency back in the system, nobody disagrees on. I think the pathway to that resiliency is more nebulous. Our feeling that pathway to resiliency is getting wetlands back.
Right.
Some people's pathway to resiliency would be more storage, more, you know, different novel of storage. So I think there's differences in that, but I think everybody agrees that we need a resilient system if either the species or the people are going to persist on this landscape.
Do you think BOR, I mean, I know, I'm just going to say it from at least my perspective in attending these meetings, even as of late, there doesn't seem to be direction. It just seems to be a feel good just to meet and meet again and meet again, and yet BOR kind of dangles over everybody in the room that they'll be the ultimate decision maker. But yet, with even just the presentation that you just provided, it's kind of a no-brainer, and it's not logical to me for how BOR is reacting to everything that's going on when it's right there in your face, basically, just water the system and instead of exasperating it, because we're seeing that here on the Shasta and Scott systems with the curtailments that happened last year with the drought and part of this year, they're drying up the sponge, I call it, and it can't release water if it doesn't receive it. It's all going in stream. And so I'd be most interested in getting a copy of this, if that's, you know, permitted, to at least get out to the contacts that I have that we're in dealing with, whether it's the facilitated group. I guess coming from another stakeholder in the group versus just your department, because I know it's just, it's so simple, it's not even funny. But yet here we sit and talk politics for another 10 years while this system is just being devastated. So I appreciate what you have brought today. I guess keep us informed as to how we can help. We're working with MODOC and Klamath County on how we get water back in the refuge, as well as the whole system in total. So just keep us in the loop, and look forward to seeing it at the meeting. Have the tribes seen this?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
And the tribes are very supportive of this idea.
They are, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I think every group takes their perspective on the pathway forward, but I do feel like there's a consensus around the idea that...
Even downriver,
yes,
tribes, as well as the Klamath tribe and MODOC?
Yeah, we've been involved with all of them, and everybody's on board, believes in the idea. The pathway is the...
Yeah. You know,
how we get there is going to be the challenge. And I would say BOR has been... I feel like they're open. The relationship seems to be open to discussion. How we'll get to that endpoint again will be the challenge, but they do seem to be open to conversations. And I agree with you, the system did work up until, you know, I always point to 2001 was that tipping point. Up until 2001, the system was working. We ran the project wet, and running the project wet was important. We were discharging up to 80,000 acre feet a year of water to the Klamath River from Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. So there is some validity to a wet system functions and a dry system doesn't function. I don't think we're ever going to get back to those numbers, but I think we can get back to some middle ground that's better for everybody.
Is there a minimum that the refuge requires to be functional? A delivery of water?
We base everything on, you know, when KBRA was being put out. Mm-hmm. What we put out as our perfect world example was between 95 and 105,000 acre feet of water. But that's a lot of flow, you know, a lot of water coming from Tule Lake through D Plant, a lot of water coming down through the irrigation systems and serving as that sort of natural sink of the water, the way the system used to flow, and then going back out. But about 95 to 105,000 acre feet for Lower Klamath. Tule Lake is a harder number to get to because it was always return flow. It's,
right.
You know, it's that closed basin. And so it was just a lot of water that ended up on Tule Lake and had to get pumped out. So, but I think that's a fair ballpark number.
Thank you.
That's interesting because we specified a number that's supposed to be more broader in the sense. I'm glad to hear that the tribes have been engaged because I think that's critical. I will tell you that when I went back to D.C. as state representative, I spoke, my first comment to Congressman LaMoffa was we need water in the refuge. I dropped like a lead balloon, quite honestly. You know, he was more worried about the dams. We're still fighting the dams. You know, I think we're past that.
Okay.
We were at the Family Farm Alliance. I went to Congressman Vince, said, Congressman, we need water in the refuge. I mean, that's been my mantra. Realizing that is not my district. My district is in the Sacramento River watershed. But even I recognize, because tourism is such a big part of it, when I go to the local Chamber of Commerce, you know, we have the monument out there. We used to have the refuge, and you see a lot of duck hunting and that kind of stuff. So I realize the importance. Congressman Pence was, hey, I work with Congressman Lamont for good. I'm hoping that they do connect somehow. I think there's value, and we need help on everyone at the table type of thing. I've been trying to meet with the Yurok tribe, trying to get tribes, because, you know, we need to be working together, if you will. You know, I'm a believer in the wetland, how it plays out. But I think we need to all kind of get away from this siloed type of approach. So. Did you have anything you wanted to say real quick?
Yeah, real quick. I'm a huge believer in tribal engagement and how we can all work together on this. We've spent countless hours at the table trying to figure out how to work together to move forward. We can never seem to come to, we all agree we need to have water out there. Nobody can agree on how to make it happen. You have some fantastic ideas. I'm not going to go into the biology of any of it. We've all said our piece, and I agree with everyone at the table here. We have to come up with some kind of a viable path forward. Looking at climate change, we all know what happens. We all know it's going to change over 50 years, 100 years, 20 years. There's models out there that say it's going to do stuff before it's going to do it again. We know that. And we have to plan for the future and figure out what that's going to look like no matter what the climate does. Because we can't control that very well. And we all have to figure out how, whether we agree to disagree, whatever that is, but come up with some plan to get water back out there and for everybody. And figure out how to make it work with the best interest of everyone. And how we can all come to the table and do that with the least resistance. We're going to have to figure that out. We've been trying for years and haven't managed to do it yet. So, good luck. I hope we can come to the table and figure it out. So, I think we all agree with that.
I think the one takeaway for me is that the sacrifice is all important to the tribes, that they would find the value if that's a natural habitat. Having water there would be to their advantage.
Yeah, I believe I believe they agree with that. And Refuge really stepped up with the Tewatam's sucker fish. Restoring those fish.
Well, that was the original plan, Tule Lake going dry. We did store them. We have some ponds that we did store them on. But yeah, it would have been nice to put them back into Tule Lake and then have them there. Tule Lake is really that's the big hinge point right now. If we had Tule Lake, that's a big body of water. We could start growing fish. And Lower Klamath is a lot of big bodies of water that we can manage and grow fish effectively. So I think that's it's a great pathway forward to at least start that process.
That's something I think we can all buy in on and agree to, is how I look at it.
And he had a comment that you see as an ally, or CS as an ally also.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I sure appreciate the time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Wendy?
Yes, can we take a break?
You're the one. You drive the ship.
Yep.
Tell me how long.
5 minutes.
Five minutes.
I just
take a break.
Is there any way that you can save that on her desktop?
I just did.
You did?
Thank you.